Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
This is Jessica, and you're listening to the Asian Madness Podcast. It's the last episode of 2025, so happy holidays in advance to you if you celebrate. Hopefully this year has treated you well, and you've made time for your hobbies, family, friends, but most importantly, for yourself. It's easy to get lost in the daily life of school, work, and other people, and you end up neglecting yourself. Make sure you keep yourself happy and healthy, because without that, everything kind of sucks. That's my opinion, just saying. Anyway, what are we talking about today? Today's case is actually a listener suggestion, so in case you're still around, thank you, Muna, from Malaysia. So let's get into it. You know how sometimes the people you trust, or people you're supposed to trust, turn out to be the ones who hurt you? Betrayals like these can hurt more because it feels unexpected. A stranger hurting you? Not cool. But you might get over it. A family member, somebody you know personally? Well, that will complicate things. It can be emotional injury, but it can also be fatal. This is one of those stories. It starts with a young man, only 20 years old, a Navy cadet with a dream to one day become a captain. But that dream was never realized because his life was cut short over a ridiculous misunderstanding. Or so it seems. This was not an accident, and it wasn't just one person's doing. His name is Zulfarhan Osman Zulkarnain, accused of a petty crime. And even if true, the punishment did not fit the crime. We will find out how a simple accusation turned into one of Malaysia's most disturbing campus crimes. Let's begin. Before his name became a headline, before the courtroom drama and the heartbreak, Zulfarhan Osman Zulkarnain was just a boy with a dream. Born on November 29, 1996 in Kuala Lumpur, Farhan, as his loved ones called him, which also meant joy, wasn't the loudest in the room. He was not the kind of boy to pick fights or draw attention to himself. In fact, his father once described him as quiet, respectful, and the kind of son that any parent would be proud of. The kind who followed rules, the kind who stayed out of trouble. Very Asian-coded, if you know what I mean. Farhan had a younger brother, and according to reports, his mother struggled with miscarriages before finally giving birth to her oldest son. So, understandably, he was a source of joy in his parents' life. From a young age, Farhan had one goal, to become a Navy captain. Not just a soldier, but a leader at sea. And this dream was rooted deep in him, tied to Malaysia's proud maritime history and his fascination with ships. So when he got accepted into the National Defense University of Malaysia, it felt like the beginning of everything he'd worked for. He enrolled in the naval program, studying electrical engineering. He was smart, disciplined, and took his role seriously. His parents had every reason to believe he was on the right path. They still remember the day they dropped him off at the university. His mother, Hawa, said he told her to look through his belongings if she ever missed him. That simple gesture stayed with her. And yet, university life was not perfect. Living in a dorm surrounded by high-pressure routines and strict military culture, tensions were bound to rise. The usual things kids complain about cropped up. Shared spaces, clashing personalities, noise, what have you. It was never anything serious, and despite it all, Farhan never got a disciplinary record. He wasn't the type to bully or haze others, which might have made him stand out, but for the wrong reasons. He wasn't like the others. And in places like these, where the idea of holding power is everything, being different can be dangerous. It can put a target on your back. So what happened to Farhan? It all started with a silly laptop. May 21st, 2017. Inside the dorms of the National Defense University of Malaysia, a group of students approached 20-year-old Farhan. Their tone was off, accusatory, and aggressive. They claimed he had stolen a laptop. Farhan said he hadn't taken anything. Again and again, he denied it. But they didn't believe him, or maybe they didn't care. They could have just been out for random blood. So instead of having a conversation about it like regular people, what followed was an ambush. They pushed him, punched him, dragged him back to his room like he was a criminal. What happened behind those closed doors over the next several hours was nothing short of torture. On the surface, it was about a laptop, but it ended up being more than that. From 2:30 in the morning until sunrise, Farhan was beaten with plastic pipes, hangers, hoses, whatever they could grab and use as a weapon. But the worst item they used was a steam iron. One by one, they took turns pressing it into his skin, dragging it across his chest, his back, even his private parts. The pain must have been unimaginable, excruciating, reminiscent of the Middle Ages or something like that. Definitely not what you would expect in the 21st century, and definitely not from a bunch of students who are supposed to be in school to learn and serve their country. 50 shades of messed up. And all of this just to force a confession about a laptop. But Farhan never confessed, because there was nothing to confess to. At this point, if he had confessed, it would have made sense as well. Torturing people to get a confession is not exactly a new tactic. But we definitely should know how flawed it is. People confess under pressure, and people in military school should know better. But again, were they really hung up on this laptop, or were they just out there doing this whole boys will be boys thing? They left him in the morning, telling anyone who asked that he was just sick. And after their classes that day, they came back. Not to check on him, but to do it all over again. It was barbaric, and I'm genuinely shocked that Farhan has managed to stay alive after all the beatings and pain inflicted on him. These degenerates used the same steam iron on the same exact wounds, layering new burns over old ones. They rotated the iron between the six of them, taking turns torturing their classmate. And in between beatings, they actually tried to treat his injuries. Not that it helped. Because rubbing ointment on second-degree burns hardly undoes the damage. Believe it or not, they spent the next few days repeating the same process. Beat, torture, leave, return. Rinse and repeat. If these are the people being trained to protect your country, how safe are you really? But you know what really comes to mind when hearing about all this? Where the hell are the teachers? The other students? How was it that no one heard all this going on? Or perhaps were other students suspicious but unable or unwilling to say anything, fearing that they would be next? This is a dorm room, not an off-campus house in the middle of nowhere. 6 days after the first attack, they finally brought him to a small private clinic. I do not understand the train of thought here, but then again, none of this makes sense to me. The doctor, assuming his injuries came from military training, gave him some medication and sent him right back to the same hands that had tortured him. So ridiculous, I have no words. By May 31st, 10 days after all this started, his condition became critical. No shit. These degenerates took him to the clinic again, but it was already too late. In the early hours of June 1st, one of the students, Muhammad Amin, noticed something was wrong. He sent another cadet, Muhammad Nazir, to check on Farhan. Nazir found him unresponsive. When he said he couldn't perform CPR, panic set in, and that's when they finally called an ambulance. But, like everything else in this frustrating case, the ambulance came too late. Farhan was pronounced dead shortly after arriving at Serdang Hospital. When his parents got the call at around 11:30 p.m., they drove through the night, 300 kilometers from Johor to Selangor. They arrived at 3 a.m., desperate to see their son, but they weren't allowed to view his body until 9. And when they finally did, they understood why. The university initially claimed that he had died from a training accident, but this was very quickly disproven, because what kind of training incident would even cause this? And if it did happen, where are the witnesses? Wouldn't they need to file incident reports detailing the whole accident? The way they tried to cover their ass just boils my blood. When the autopsy results came in, it became pretty obvious. Farhan's body had become a canvas of violence, layered, brutal, and very deliberate. There were burns that had dried and crusted over, and others that were still raw. Some had scabbed, others were slick with a mix of blood and fluid, exposing the muscle beneath. A patch on his right shoulder, roughly the size of a hand. A large burn on his chest, nearly the width of a sheet of paper, overlapping with others like they'd been stacked one over the other. On his abdomen, a similar pattern, burns over burns. His flanks, midsection, forearms, torso, all marked with areas of damaged flesh. Even his private areas were not spared. In total, the pathologist recorded 90 burns across Farhan's body. Of those, 29 were third-degree burns, the kind that kill tissue down to the bone. Just 3% were first degree, meaning barely any of the injuries were superficial. Most of the damage was severe, spread across 80% of his body. It wasn't hard to figure out what did it. The patterns were too specific. Straight-edged, rounded at the corners, very consistent. The burns match exactly with a common household item, a steam iron. A genuine accident would not produce such pattern burns, but it wasn't just the burns. There were other signs of physical assault. A bruise under his left eye, a cut across his brow, internal bleeding from the scalp, on the left, right, and center of his skull. The forensic expert who testified said it plainly. Even if Farhan had made it to the hospital sooner, his chances would have been slim. His skin had started to melt. His body was failing on every level. Massive fluid loss, infection, damaged organs, a complete breakdown of the systems that keep a person alive. Hypovolemic shock, bacterial spread, electrolyte collapse. His body was sticky, not just from sweat, but because the skin barrier was no longer intact. This clearly was not the work of just one person. At first, this was seen as a case of bullying gone too far, but once the severity of the situation was made clear, Farhan's father filed a police report because he wanted to call it what it was, murder. You'd have to be completely evil to not entertain this. After all the examinations, Farhan was eventually buried in Johor Bahru, in the city where he was born. His mother, Hawa Osman, had already suffered various miscarriages before Farhan came into her life, watched the boy she fought desperately for be lowered into the ground, his dreams cut short by people he once would supposedly call brothers. Then the important question everyone began to ask, why didn't anyone stop it? That's when their investigation really began. As it usually goes, the truth did not come out all at once, and it usually never does. We call that trickle-truthing. 90 burns, some so severe that they reached his muscle and bones. Farhan's burns were so grave that there was simply no recovering from them, even with a dedicated team of doctors. By mid-June 2017, just 2 weeks after Farhan's death, police had arrested 19 students. All of them were from the same university. They were all men, most of them just 21 or 22 years old, and 6 of them were charged with murder or abetting murder. The rest were just charged with causing harm in order to force a false confession. Because remember, that was the excuse, a missing laptop. But now you're probably wondering, why did they accuse Farhan to start with? Of all the students, why him? Was it random? What led them to believe that this quiet, unproblematic young man had anything to do with a stolen item? Let me clarify. The reason was not grounded in any kind of logic or investigation. Quite the opposite, which makes the story even more frustrating. Would it have been slightly better if these assholes genuinely believed Farhan was a thief? You tell me. Let's go back a bit in time now, on the night of May 20th, 2017, around 9:30 p.m. A student named Akmal Zuhari noticed his brand new laptop was gone. Annoyed, he turned to a few of his friends in the dorm and said, "Check Farhan's locker." No clarity on why he thought it might have been Farhan, but his friends checked his locker anyway and found nothing. They went into his room and checked. Still nothing. But the strange seed of doubt was already planted, so suspicion had already locked onto Farhan. One of Farhan's roommates offered an unusual suggestion. He told the group that his father, someone known for claiming supernatural insight, could help. A bomo, or a shaman. The roommate made the call, explained the situation, and he got his answer from his father. The thief was one of 3 people, and one of those names was Farhan. And this was all they needed to hear. Witnesses said that this was the moment things changed. That was when Akmal reportedly snapped and said, "I'm going to teach Farhan a lesson." By 3 a.m., Farhan, still asleep, was dragged from his bed. He was wearing only his pants. He was taken to another dorm room and questioned about the laptop. When his answers didn't satisfy Akmal and the others, they beat him. Farhan said he didn't take it. He said it over and over. A student in the nearby room heard the chaos and the sounds of people moving in and out, heard Farhan's voice, heard him being pummeled. The next evening around 6:30 p.m., someone saw Farhan again, back in his room, slumped, trying to change his clothes. He couldn't even put on a shirt without help. He was in pain, barely moving. But it wasn't over. Early the next morning, May 22nd, a new round of questioning began. They took him again, this time to room 410, which was Akmal's room, maybe because it offered them more privacy. Farhan's supposed friends also followed. Some stayed for hours, watching and waiting for the torture to end, but it never did. That night, between 1 and 5 in the morning, Farhan was beaten again. By then, he wasn't even wearing pants, just his underwear. Witnesses said 12 people were in that room. One after the other, they took turns beating him. And then the iron came out. Between 4:55 and 5:45 a.m., a student named Abdul Hakim was seen holding a steam iron and instructing 5 others to use it on Farhan's body. And they did. Again and again. Farhan screamed with each press of the metal. His hands were tied. His feet, too. Eventually, he lost consciousness. It only stopped when the morning prayer call echoed across the campus. At 7:30 a.m., someone else walked into room 410 and saw 18 students inside. Farhan was lying there, burned, broken, and barely clothed. Abdul Hakim, they said, didn't press the iron himself. He gave the orders. He also gave a warning. No one was to tell the authorities. Not a single word. Akmal kept watch, and the door stayed locked. By May 23rd, a student from a neighboring room came looking for a friend. Instead, he found Farhan, shirtless, barely covered from the waist down, skin blistered and blackened in places. There was blood, patches of burned flesh. And yet, no one took him to the hospital. The perpetrators tried to care for him, themselves, most likely to cover up evidence of their depravity, not out of love or concern. Maybe to keep him alive just long enough to avoid a body, but not to save him. One student, disturbed by what he saw, wrote a letter, a plea for help. He slipped it in front of the Army Central Hospital, hoping someone would read it and intervene. Unfortunately, it was found by the wrong people and shared on a WhatsApp group. Akmal saw it, and rather than stopping the abuse, moved Farhan to room 406. On May 26, Farhan was moved again, this time to a hotel. The plan was to sneak him into a private clinic the next day. The rest, of course, we already know. That baseless revelation by the shaman was all the boys needed to justify torturing a fellow classmate to death. So many terrible decisions were made those few days. Let's put aside for a second whether or not we believe the shaman was being real or not. He mentioned three names. Why was only Farhan asked about it? Clearly these people already held a strange grudge against him, or they found him an easy target. So even if the laptop turned up eventually, they would probably still find a way to say he was involved.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
The trial officially started in January 2018, and it didn't take long for witness after witness to paint a chilling picture. Friends testified, roommates. Other students admitted they saw or heard what was happening. Some tried to help, one student even sent anonymous letters to the university higher-ups, but instead of taking action, someone forwarded the letter to a WhatsApp group. And once the abusers saw that they were discovered, they simply moved Farhan to another location to continue their torture, instead of stopping. Doctors testified too. Dr. Asfar treated Farhan at a clinic after he was finally brought in. The burns were so severe that Dr. Asfar told the students to take him to a hospital immediately. But they didn't. They took him back to campus, possibly scared of what might be found if they took him to a hospital. Even when Farhan returned to the clinic again, weak, dehydrated, and barely holding on, they still didn't take him to a hospital. Not until it was too late. In court, the forensic report confirmed that after 90 burns, over 29 of which were third degree, his body was shutting down. His heart, his kidneys, everything was collapsing from the trauma. But the defense pushed back. They tried to argue that there was no intent to kill, that the burns were just part of the interrogation, that they loved Farhan, which was why they avoided burning his face. Wow, I get that defense attorneys are paid to, you know, defend, but what the actual fuck? These little shits admitted to pressing the iron on his thighs, chest, feet, everywhere, but they claimed they didn't think it would kill him. A very likely story. The courtroom heard things no one should have said out loud. One of these students said he only pressed the iron down because someone handed it to him. Another said that he waved it near the skin, but didn't expect it to cause damage. One by one, they tried to explain, to soften what they had done, to distance themselves from the monsters that they actually are. But the facts were brutal, and the facts didn't care how sorry they were. Let's be real. Shockingly, in 2021, 4 years after Farhan's death, the court delivered a verdict that many saw as far too lenient. Instead of being found guilty of murder, the six were convicted of causing death without intent to kill. They were sentenced to 18 years in prison, but because their sentence started from the day of their arrest in 2017, it was effectively cut down by nearly 4 years. 12 others were also sentenced to just 3 years for taking part in the torture. The public reaction to this verdict, of course, wasn't great. They grieved, but also raged that the system had failed. It had failed Farhan and every future victim who might suffer silently in a dorm room like he did. The prosecution wasn't done, though. They filed an appeal, pushing back against the idea that this was just a case of things going too far. Their argument was clear. The accused men used a hot iron over and over again on someone who was helpless. They knew what they were doing. They chose to keep going, and now they had to answer for it. And so, in 2024, the case came back into the spotlight, and for the family still grieving their son, it offered them one last chance. It had been 2 years and 7 months since the High Court handed down its ruling. The ruling in which 6 young men were convicted not of murder, but of manslaughter, and sentenced to 18 years. But in May of 2024, the case returned, this time to the Court of Appeal. The prosecution wasn't ready to let it rest, especially not with the nature of this crime. They pushed for what they believed had always been the right charge. Murder, plain and simple. And for the 6 men responsible, death. Standing before a panel of 3 appellate judges, Deputy Public Prosecutor Kay Mangai laid it out again. 90 burns, 29 of them third degree, the kind that cut their skin into muscle, exposing wet tissue. Completely irreversible. Even if doctors had gotten to Farhan earlier, the damage was already too much. These 6 men, Akmal, Azamuddin, Najib, Afif, Shobirin, and Hakim, were not bystanders. They didn't fail to act. They just acted, repeatedly, taking turns, scalding him, torturing him. Hakim didn't even touch the iron, but he stood over them, giving orders. The prosecutor reminded the court that this was not hazing, this was not discipline, this was pure violence. Is that what's being taught in the military? Torture until you get what you want? Whatever means necessary? I highly doubt that, but it really makes a school look bad, especially if they insist on doing damage control by downplaying the situation. Like, sir, this is murder. And then she brought the focus back to what mattered, Farhan's family. Their grief, the loss of a son, a brother, a boy with a future. His mother's words echoed in court, her plea that punishment should match not just the crime, but the cruelty in which it was done. But on the other side, there was a different kind of appeal happening. The defense lawyers representing 18 of the students pushed back against the verdict, arguing that they deserved a lower sentence. Some claimed their clients only acted once. Others said that they meant no real harm, that they helped take Farhan to the clinic, that they were just young and didn't know it would go this far. You know, boys being boys. Hakim's lawyer took a different route, one that shocked the courtroom. He tried to turn and put the blame back onto the victim, suggesting Farhan had opportunities to seek help and that he could have left the room, made a call, or told someone else. But even the judges wouldn't entertain it. One of them asked flatly, "Are you really blaming the boy who was tied up and tortured for his own death?" The fucking audacity of these people. The prosecutor fired back, reminding them all, Farhan couldn't even sit up, couldn't walk without help, couldn't put on a shirt without help. His lips were cracked from dehydration. His body had melted and had gotten stuck against the back seat of the car that took him to the clinic. The judge listened. For 3 days, they heard every word. And then on July 23, 2024, the verdict came down. This time, the court did not hold back. They overturned the manslaughter verdict, and all 6 men were found guilty of murder. Just like that, the 18-year sentence was gone. All 6 were sentenced to death, and the 12 others had their 3-year sentences extended to 4. Justice Hadharia Syed Ismail, leading the panel, said the previous court had made a mistake, focusing too much on which specific injury had caused Farhan's death, as if that mattered. Under Malaysian law, for a murder charge to stand, the prosecution only had to prove that the accused intended to inflict injuries likely to cause death. Not which injury, not how many, just that the intention was there. And that, the judges agreed, was clear. I'm sure it's clear to all of us. Five of the accused had taken turns pressing the iron into Farhan's body. They tied him up, ignored his screams, continued while he collapsed. Hakim may not have touched the iron, but he told them to do it. And he watched. It doesn't make him less guilty or a better person. So the court called it what it was. Inhumane, sadistic, and unforgivable. Justice Hadharia said this case had shaken both the court's conscience and the public's. She said no parent should have to see their child suffer the way Farhan did. She described it as one of the rarest of the rare cases, a level of cruelty so extreme it demanded the harshest sentence the laws allowed. For Farhan's parents, it was a kind of justice, one that they waited years to see. His father said he was so relieved that the system had finally seen his son, and seen what those other so-called boys are. His mother said that while she wished the bomo, or the shaman, who had falsely accused her son would come forward and apologize, she would forgive him if he had the courage to at least admit that he was wrong. While that's a nice sentiment, people who commit such crimes are usually not very nice. 3 days after the ruling, Farhan's father shared in a radio interview that not a single one of the 18 men sentenced had apologized. Not in court, not after. Only one ever had, the 19th accused, who was acquitted and never laid a hand on Farhan. He apologized. The rest stayed silent. On the same day the verdict was handed down, the six murder convicts filed an appeal to the federal court, the highest court in the country. The final hearing came on February 28, 2025. And just like that, it changed again. The federal court overturned the murder conviction, saying there was insufficient proof of intent to kill. The death sentences were thrown out, and the men were once again found guilty of manslaughter. Their 18-year sentences were reinstated. Farhan's father said very little after that. What else is there to say? No matter how long they served, they would still walk out of prison one day, while his son would never do anything ever again. He said a few of the convicts' families had approached him in private, said that they were disgusted by what their sons had done, and that he forgave them, partially, but he didn't want to see any of them ever again, not at a reunion or a gathering or even at the prison gate. Especially not after they had all this time to say something, but they said nothing. Farhan's father then addressed the human rights groups who had lobbied against the death penalty in this case. He asked where they were when his son was being tortured, when he was being scalded from head to toe, while 18 people just watched. That's a fair question. So there you have it. The absolute brutal, unjust, and evil murder committed on one young man by 19 others, over a stupid laptop. But of course, it never was about the laptop, was it? It was just an excuse for depraved and stupid young men to act on their unhinged fantasies. These guys should never have been admitted to this school. Do they show discipline, respect, honor, integrity, accountability? The list goes on, but you get my point. If they rely on school to teach them all of this, then it's a little too late for them. So instead, what do we get? A young man with a dream, a group of classmates who turned on him, a crime that was brushed off as hazing until it couldn't be ignored any longer, and a justice system that gave and then took back what many believed was the only fitting punishment. The death penalty is a topic that divides people, understandably. Some say it's justice, others say it's just another case of violence, and that violence does not justify more. But in cases like these, where the cruelty was slow, deliberate, and shared among so many, where the victim was silenced for days while people walked in and out of the room and did nothing, what do you think? Should the death penalty still stand in cases like these? If not, what punish would make more sense? Do we measure justice by punishment or by the message it sends to the next group of students who might believe silence protects them? I would love to hear your thoughts on this, and as always, thank you for listening to this episode of Asian Madness. This was very cruel and very barbaric, and I sincerely hope Farhan's family is healing and moving on, as difficult as it may be. Fuck those other guys, though. Please take care, be kind, and see you next year.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.